Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast with me, your host, Danny Kennedy, and you're listening to episode number 29. Welcome back to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, guys, and on this week's episode, we have finally got a hold of Michael Klim. Good to have you on the show, mate.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, no, sorry I've been a bit hard to get hold of, but it's good to finally make it and good to chat to you.
Yeah, so today, guys, what we're going to cover is a little bit of health and fitness, obviously a bit about MK's swimming career, but also life after professional sport and a bit of the entrepreneur business side as well. So, Klimmy, we'll start off the episode. I'll get you to tell us a little bit about your professional swimming career, kind of where it started and what you achieved throughout your career.
Yeah, sure. Look, I was a representative on the Aussie swim team for nearly 13 years. I went to three Olympic Games, with my first one being the 96 Olympics. I made my first Aussie swim team in 95, went to Atlanta, Sydney probably being the highlight in terms of my success domestically, and then finished off with Athens in 2004. Probably my best year, or the 2 years of my career, was 97 and 98. I broke my first world record in 100 meters butterfly in Brisbane at the Trials for Worlds. Went 52.15, broke Denis Pankratov's world record, and then went on to win the world title a few months later in Perth in 98. So that meet was probably my breakthrough meet, where I won 7 medals, 4 gold, 2 silver and a bronze, and I won my second world title in the 200 freestyle as well. So yeah, I guess, you know, all throughout my career, I broke about 21 world records, both in relays and individually. So, look, it was a great honour to be on the Aussie swim team. I was one of the I was making up the numbers when you had people like Ian Thorpe, Grant Hackett, Kieran Perkins, Susie O'Neill, Samantha Riley, Patricia Thomas, Libby Trickett, Liesl Jones, Daniel Kowalski. You know, the names just keep going. So it was just such a great group of guys, and everyone was on the same path, everyone had same values, everyone was, you know, everyone was kind of leading by example. So it was a real great group of people.
Yeah, and obviously you love the sport, but was swimming something that you'd always wanted to do growing up? Was that pretty much the only sport you focused on, or was there anything else early days?
Well, for me, I was always very active. Growing up, I learned to swim probably the same time I learned to walk, so I was very much a water baby from the word get-go. And I had a pretty interesting upbringing, where we'd moved around the world a lot because of my dad's work commitments, and swimming became something that kind of remained constant while a lot of things around my life changed, like languages and schools and friends. And so I sort of, you know, it was one thing that I sort of used to fall back on as something that was kind of my little safety blanket sort of thing. But I was definitely more athletic than anything, and I still, the fact that I played a lot of tennis and basketball and water polo, surf life saving, I kind of tried to use that to my advantage in the pool. And you could probably tell by the type of stroke I had, the straight arm recovery. Yep. Also with my butterflies, quite dynamic, I developed the underwater stroke as well. So it was certainly, I was very much into sport from a very early age.
Yeah, and you've just got back from the Olympics not long ago. You're over there in Rio. How do you think the future of Australian swimming is looking at the moment?
Look, I think the future is great. I think we've obviously had some amazing swimmers come through with gold, obviously with Kyle Chalmers winning the Blue Ribbon event in 100 free, and probably upsetting, you know, our favourite in Cameron McAvoy, who we all expected was going to probably pick up a couple gold medals. And then Mac Horton winning the 400 freestyle in a great race with Soon Young, who probably we expected him winning the 1500, but he delivered in the 400. So they were the two young bloods that have come through. And we're probably a little bit disappointed with the Campbell sisters, that, you know, both Bronte and Kate were, Bronte coming off the world championship title, Kate being in form, breaking the world record 2 months prior to the Olympics. I was expecting those girls to come away with a few more individual medals, but they did win the 4x1 freestyle relay. But I think overall between Mitch Larkin, the Campbell sisters, Emily Seebohm, and Cameron McElvoy, there's probably a few medals that went missing. I think that we've come a long way since Kazan, since the World Championships, and the culture and the team's change, and they're definitely on the right track, but there's a few medals that probably went missing.
Yep, 100%. Now, moving on a little bit, how old were you when you retired from professional racing?
Oh, I retired a couple of times. Most athletes, I retired for the first time in 2007 at the age of 29. And just after the World Championships here in Melbourne at Rod Laver Arena, where they put a temporary pool there, and I had a pretty bad year, and I just qualified for the relays and really wasn't enjoying the sport. I had come off a pretty tough trot. I had a reasonable Commonwealth Games here in Melbourne, winning some individual medals, but then just never reached the heights that I got in 1999, 2000, 1998. So I sort of started after those injuries. I wasn't really enjoying the process, which for me was the whole reason why I was training, was just to, the journey and then obviously going through the ups and downs of the preparation. But that was part of the drive for me, the process of getting ready. And that was something that I was, I was missing sessions. And if as soon as you come to 9 out of 10 sessions, you're behind the 8 ball because everyone else is doing probably one extra. So I retired for the first time, and then I still stayed very fit. Fitness is a big part of my everyday routine, and I stayed in reasonable shape, and did some different things like some adventure racing, some open water swimming, some cycling, Dancing with the Stars, kept me pretty fit. And it's a joke, by the way. But I decided in 2010 that I was going to just put 18 months of fairly solid work and see what level I could get to, which in hindsight was pretty reasonable. I got to a little bit quicker than what I retired at in 2007. So, and that was at the age of 34, 35. So it proves that you can get to a pretty good solid level. Unfortunately for me, but fortunately for Australian swimming, there was a couple of guys, James Magnusson, Cameron McElvoy, come on the scene, James Roberts. So they've moved ahead and they were swimming some superb times. It was actually the same level to make the Aussie finals, what it did almost the Olympic finals. So I missed out on the spot, but I enjoyed the journey, and it got me out of changing nappies. So that was another bonus.
Bonus. And how did you find the transition going from being a full-time professional athlete to then, going back to, normal life compared to what you were used to anyway?
Oh, look, I think it's
definitely something that you see a lot of professional sports people struggle with, is going from a full-time kind of everyday commitment to then being just left to their own devices.
So, I think people talk about elite sport as being so demanding and, you have to sacrifice so much. But I kind of found that elite sport or professional sport for me was quite simple. You have professionals working for you and with you, and almost you get things handed to you on the platter, from, your nutritional needs, your recovery, your massage doctors, everything. So you're very structured, very organized. You got people, at your beck and call, and it's a very simple mindset. I think it's, you basically live just to produce one outcome, and you're kind of in the driver's seat, you're controlling everything. And it's a pretty simple existence, I think. But then, the transition into normal everyday life, where you can't spend 4 or 5 hours exercising, you have to go to work, you've got family commitments, you still have to look after yourself, there's other pressures. I think that for me, that was much more complicated and much harder to deal with. When I was, living in Institute of Sport, I wouldn't even know how to post a letter.
Yeah.
So, it's you get people doing everything for you. So it's sort of just becoming part of normal society and being proactive and doing things for yourself, either starting your own business or getting an education or whatever it might be. So, and, there's a lot of athletes, and I struggled a little bit just to find their identity, because you forever, I'll still get recognized as a swimmer, but I'm no longer that person anymore. You know, obviously that's my past, but I can't rely on that. Mm. So you have to try and forge your own, you know, path forward.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned before, health and fitness is a massive part of your everyday life since you finished swimming. What type of training are you doing currently, and is there anything kind of in particular that you like to work on? Or,
oh, you know, DK, you train me most of the time, and you know what I enjoy. I still like to really push myself every now and again. I think there's no better feeling when your eyeballs are about to pop out of your head. So, and you know, that level of exhaustion is, I think, is a little bit addictive. And I like, I tend to probably do, you know, two of those HIIT sessions a week. And if it's mixing a high level sort of intensity workout with, you know, some strength. But, and then, you know, it's, for me, swimming now is more of a, recovery meditative type of training, where I just go to use it as relaxation, and occasionally, you know, a bit of cycling or some other group sort of sessions if it's boot camp or whatever, something like that. So I really vary it. I don't have a routine as such, and it really depends on also my injuries and aches and pains. So I think, you know, and also because I'm traveling so much, I just try to you know, put my body under different stresses where it's adapting at different times. And I'm not really training for anything. So, you know, I like being outdoors. And if it's, you know, like we did, we just went for a jog just then.
Yep.
If it's jogging or surfing or cycling or doing a group session outdoors, or even getting, you know, smashing it in the gym, I enjoy that too. So I think variety is the key, and then consistency. So I think it's, you know, trying to make sure I don't have too many days off, and even if it's a half an hour jog, it's still something that is worthwhile doing.
Yeah, for sure. And clearly, as a professional athlete, nutrition is extremely important, but so is nutrition just, you know, in everyday life. How important do you think it is to stay on top of your nutritional intake? But also, what do you find the hardest thing, considering that you are having to travel so much?
Yeah.
You've got so many, you know, social events and stuff you need to be at.
Yeah, I must say, for me, probably nutrition has been the hardest thing to manage. And because, as you know, I'm probably still used, or I like to eat probably the same volumes and the type of food I used to when I was training and you know, swimming for 4 hours a day and, you know, burning so many kilojoules. Whereas now I think, you know, also with traveling, it's a little bit tricky sometimes trying to eat well. And I'm not great at planning with my nutrition. So it's just trying to keeping a few simple rules. One for me is trying to eat fresh as often as I can, but not great at that. Portion control as well. Again, I tend to overeat, so try and remind myself not to overeat when I don't have to. Probably staying off the grog, moderating that. I think that's another thing that can easily get the better of us, and then just minimizing some of the, you know, the processed foods, which you know, if it's lollies or simple carbs, etc., which again I tend to enjoy too. So as long as you're aware of it and try and do the best you can, I think that those are sort of the rules that I'm, you know, try and abide by at the moment. Even when I was swimming, it was still pretty simple. It was about timing of meals. It wasn't really cutting anything out. It was more about making sure you're getting the right carbs, right proteins, you know, within half an hour to an hour after training, having, you know, really good balanced diet. You know, obviously protein was key. We were eating up to 200 grams of protein a day. So, you know, spacing that throughout the day and supplementing that through shakes or, you know, different type of means. So, there was, you know, people think that elite sportsmen have super sophisticated diets. I tend to just disagree with that. It's really basics. Basics, keeping it fresh and just timing, healthy food. That's kind of the key.
Yeah, and like I say on a lot of my social media stuff, and I've said it on the podcast before, is that everyone's nutritional intake and rules that they kind of follow should be the same. It's just the actual amounts and stuff that are changing around. You know, like my diet will look exactly the same as someone that's wanting to just get fit, or someone that's wanting to lose a few kilos, or even someone that just needs to improve their all-round general health, even if I'm getting ready for a show or an athlete or someone's getting ready for competition, it should be the same, just the intake, the actual intake is slightly different. So I want to move on to a little bit more business now. So you've obviously got Milk and Klim at the moment. So when did the idea of Milk come about, and what was the process of getting that up and running?
Well, there's a couple of things that sort of got me into it. Being a swimmer, I've always, you know, swimmers always have to kind of look after the skin, being exposed to chlorine all the time and swimming outdoors. We've always had to protect our skin, and you probably see majority of the swimmers walking around with either green hair or really dry skin. So it's something that for us is quite normal, and we didn't need too much convincing. But there was certainly a lack of Australian-made products for Aussie males around when I was sort of getting closer to my first retirement. And so, I decided to create my own range for Aussie blokes and position it in an area where they wouldn't feel, or wouldn't be apprehensive about buying it, so, or ashamed for buying skincare, because it's really just, I wanted to create sort of everyday basics at an affordable price, and they could buy it at the, you know, local supermarket or pharmacy. And that was the whole idea of it, with a, you know, pretty strong Australian heritage designed for the Aussie climate and the harsh Aussie conditions. So, so we started with a men's range in 2008, followed by a natural baby's product, and recently some women's products as well, and a small nutritional sports range of protein snacks. So it's grown, you know, we're in about 3,000 shops around the country at the moment, and from Coles, Woolies, Chemist Warehouse, Priceline. So it's quite readily available, which I'm really, you know, proud to say that the Milk & Co. brand, and now the men's range is called Klim by Milk & Co., has expanded, and I think it's becoming a fairly a household name within the Australian home.
Yeah, you've done an awesome job. And obviously with the background that you had coming from being a professional athlete, and like you said before, kind of everything has been almost done for you in regards to outside of swimming and training. Did you have to kind of find any business mentors when you did make the decision that you wanted to start up Milk & Co.?
Yeah, definitely. So I had no idea about retail. I had no tertiary education in this sort of field, no marketing experience. I've been involved with brands where I was used to market and promote brands, but I never on the other side of it. So I kind of learned on the job, and unfortunately I made a few costly and very expensive mistakes along the way, and luckily it was only at the beginning, because you know the stakes get higher as the business grows, so I wouldn't make some of them again, hope. But it's certainly as you become more knowledgeable and the business grows, I think I definitely used to fall back on some and talk to people that were experienced in that field, and not necessarily always in skincare, but just retail and business in general. There's some fundamentals that I neglected from day dot, and some of them were, you know, making sure your financials are in order, your books, etc. So those, you know, I was kind of going a lot of the time on the hunch and an idea and a gut feeling, whereas unfortunately when you're investing money that you've saved the entire life, you have to go on more than just your gut. So I've had to sort of get a better understanding of finances, being able to read P&Ls and balance sheets and working on cash flows, etc. Those were the things that kind of turned my business around. And then building the right team of people, that's something that I could definitely, you know, we talked about the people that were supporting me and getting the best out of myself in the pool, was the same sort of scenario applies in the business sense. So, you know, I try and have, you know, the best CFO in the business, the best marketing expert, best head of sales, best logistics operations person. So building experts in every different area, very similar to where I had, you know, the best physiologist, best coach, best masseur, best doctor. So, and ultimately everyone's, you know, has the same goal in mind, different areas of expertise. And when you put these, you know, the people together, you can get a really good outcome. So, so that's another fundamental thing. The other thing that I applied from swimming was that, you know, I was always very analytical in my sport, and I used to study myself and the opposition and log everything. And I think that's something, as a business grows, you sort of you learn about yourself a lot more. So, you know, I applied that as well to, you know, we get as many numbers and study those, and so we can make educated decisions if it's developing your products or if it's investing money in certain marketing activity or if it's or even product development, etc. So that's another thing. And then ultimately just developing that sense of purpose that I talked about at the beginning of the show, that, you know, there's some kind of a drive. So there's got to be a passion behind it. So most, you know, I think I've built a pretty good team where they all are on the same path as well.
Awesome. And for those listening, if you've listened to previous episodes with other people I've chatted to who have started their own company or business and stuff, you'll probably start to see a bit of a reoccurring theme with all their responses. Obviously, team building, working closely with everyone, knowing your why, having a purpose, and setting specific goals.
I didn't even know that, mate, so there you go.
Yeah, well, there you go. So there's a reoccurring thing that's coming up. All right, Clemmy, do you have any rituals or morning routines that you like to stick to, whether it be, you know, just to kickstart your day or...
Besides going to the toilet at 6:04 every morning. No, that's... I'm very regular like that. Look, I do meditation. So I do a little bit of meditation. Sometimes if I don't get it done first thing in the morning, I tend to... I tell everyone that I'm going for a drive in the car and park my car in the park in Richmond and do 15 minutes of meditation every day. It's a good way just to clean my head, and a lot of the time it's between 1 and 2 o'clock when I'm sort of starting to get over it. So it just refocuses my thoughts and just clears my mind, and I can get on with the day. Rituals, I don't know. I used to have a lot of rituals. I was very... I was a little bit OCD when I was swimming, and I had to always have a brand new suit for every single race and new strap, and it had to be folded the right way and all these sort of things. I've become a little bit more relaxed now. I don't have too many, but it's very hard to have rituals when you've got 3 kids and doing all that traveling, all that sort of stuff. But I'm trying to be more organized.
Awesome. And before we wrap it up, what's the plan for Michael Klim in the near and distant future?
Look, I think obviously for us, this focus is still to keep developing Milk & Co. And, you know, I feel we're on a really good path at the moment, where the business is finally getting recognized and, you know, the brand is, you know, kicking some goals and people are sort of trusting in the product. And definitely my energies will be put into that. And from a fitness point of view, working with you continually, and maybe we should run the New York Marathon in 2017.
Started
tonight. That was a very slow 10K. We need to pick it up. But I think physically, there's nothing like a cover photo shoot that can get you motivated. So hopefully I can get one of those the next year or so we can get another body transformation shot happening. So yeah, I don't really have anything in mind at the moment from a fitness point of view, but consistency will be the key.
Awesome. Well, thanks heaps for coming on the show today, mate. And we'll hopefully chat again in the near future.
Thanks, mate.
Anything else you want to finish off with, or all good?
Oh, no. I've enjoyed working with you, and your guidance has been tremendous. When obviously not only getting ready for shoots and stuff, but even just getting when I'm traveling and sending through the sessions and just some simple advice, even for someone, you know, I've been obviously in this game myself for, you know, 20 odd years, but it's good to get recalibrated, rebalanced, and some fresh ideas. So thank you for all your help in the last few years, and I'm looking forward to a few years to go.
Definitely. Thanks for listening, guys. If you enjoyed the episode, please do leave a review and rate their podcast, and don't forget to subscribe. I'll catch you guys in the next week's episode, where we'll actually be talking about meditation. So make sure you tune in